Hello and welcome to Afternoonified,
the podcast where I've aligned myself with Dan Carlin to gain sole control over this podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm at...
Like I said, sole control.
Doing an episode. We're alive, by the way.
We're certainly doing an episode.
I'd say there's...
Yeah, I didn't actually kill Emily.
No.
I do want to make that clear.
Dan Carlin has... He's not liable.
Dan Carlin doesn't know who we are.
Dan Carlin is the Caesar of podcasting, as we've established, though.
Yes, yeah. We had a discussion and, you know, thematically appropriate and all.
Joe Rogan is the Caligula. Okay. So, God, I didn't write like a little like fun. I mean, I wrote the cold open, but I didn't write like a little fun, like, here's what we're doing today. Cause I got so like locked in on, history. I don't do, historical biography episodes too often, as you guys have probably figured out, but
yeah, say usually it's me doing this kind of episode. But I'm excited to see you branching out.
This is my Marie Antoinette.
We're not going to do this in three parts. You didn't read a whole 900-page book for it.
I did consider doing it in two parts, which would have gotten me out of jail free, because I am also in the next episode, and I don't know quite what it is yet. But other than me being a little bit lazy. No, we are talking about Cleopatra today. And I'm going to be an asshole, and I'm just going to say right off the bat, whatever you think you know about this woman, you probably are wrong.
It's going to be one of those episodes.
I'm not going to be, like, a dick about it. Honestly.
I get it. Like, I feel like the pop culture representation of Cleopatra is a little off from probably the reality.
Yes. A lot of it was because of Roman propaganda.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
No, she's one of those figures where, like, you hear a lot about her, you're like, she seems cool, but you don't really like Napoleon. I have not seen the movie yet. But, like, you just kind of are aware of this person and have an idea of them in your head, and then we're gonna learn about her for real today, so congratulations. Okay. This also might be the first case I've come across where reading the Wikipedia article on a subject made it harder to understand.
Wikipedia articles on, like, historical people are not super clear.
Well, here's the thing. With certain historical figures, we have a pretty good idea, like, because we were keeping good records. This is ancient Egypt. We were not keeping good records yet. At least not of, like, stuff that would be helpful.
Not in a way that has, like, survived to the modern day, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, like, for Marie Antoinette, we had a lot of information on, like, her daily life and stuff because we thought that was important to record. But we don't have a lot of that information on people in ancient Egypt because we were just recording, like, battles and trade shit. But,
you know, the important things that men did.
Well, and much of, like, the Neanderthals episode that I did forever ago, there was so much, like, some historians believe, and there is debate.
Yeah, of course.
So what you guys are going to get is the best that I could put together from the list of articles I'm about to tell you about. And hopefully we'll all come out of this with a better, if not potentially incomplete, understanding of this woman's life. I didn't include everything because it would be so boring.
Yeah, you can't. It would not be an entertaining episode.
It's not even boring because of the Egyptians. It's boring because of the fucking Romans. If I miss something, just know that this is like an hour-long podcast, and I don't get paid to do any of this shit. All right, so my sources are several articles from history.com, a Times article, Nat Geo, Smithsonian Magazine, and Britannica, as well as a documentary, I'm going to say documentary loosely. It's that series on Nat Geo, the Lost Treasures of Egypt or something.
That sounds familiar. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The one with they're digging and trying to find stuff. One of those. The ones where they always send like one archaeologist on like a little field trip to like a tourist destination to learn more. So they sent like Colleen Darnell out to learn about like Cleopatra. I did not watch the Netflix documentary series.
I heard that was also kind of dubious.
Okay, that's factually. Yes. I don't trust Netflix documentaries to be impartial. That's they can be entertaining. I mean, documentaries don't always have to be impartial, but for this teaching element of it, I don't trust Netflix documentaries. So
yeah, I'm maybe sure not something you want to treat as like a source for.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to like get all up in my head. I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's well made. I'm sure Jada Pinkett Smith did a fantastic job narrating it, but I don't do Netflix documentaries for this kind of stuff. I like the dry Nat Geo stuff where they're digging up old bones. Okay, so everybody ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Our story begins well before Cleopatra was even born, with the Macedonian king and future role for Colin Farrell, Alexander the Great. Incidentally, they just dropped it on Netflix, a documentary about Alexander the Great, and people were mad because they, quote, made him gay. I know.
Oh, honey.
I know.
I don't think Netflix is the person who made
him. Netflix did not make him gay.
I think Alexander the Great made himself
gay. Yeah.
Because that's how, I presume that's how the gayness works.
Yes. You just kind of decide. Like, yes. I'd love to be ostracized by society. Let's do this. Anyway, so Alexander the Great. The Persian Empire had taken over Egypt, and Alexander rolled in and basically freed the country from Persian rule in 332 BCE. He was welcomed as a liberator by the people of Egypt and was accepted as their new pharaoh. Kind of like what people say Cortez did in South America, but like he actually...
But for realsies?
For real. During his time in Egypt, Alexander founded the appropriately named city of Alexandria.
Men like to do this.
Which would become a major center of culture and learning in the ancient world. You may have heard of their library.
And their cool lighthouse.
And their cool, their very cool lighthouse. He died in 323 BCE, so, you know, not too long after he became pharaoh, and his generals divided his land between themselves. Egypt went to a guy named Ptolemy, and thus began the line of Ptolemaic rulers that would eventually ruin ancient Egypt as we know it.
Hooray! I was like, I recognize that name.
The Ptolemaic line, there's a P in it, by the way.
Yeah.
Like pterodactyl. It's actually more fun when you imagine a line of dinosaur rulers, but... so the Ptolemaic line was, to put it gently, full of bloodthirsty monsters.
Oh boy. My favorite kind of people to learn about.
And I'm gonna be honest with you guys, Cleopatra was also kind of a dick, but she was charming, so we give her a pass. And it was just kind of how things were done. Like, that's how she was raised. Like, it's not good, but it's how shit was.
Yeah.
Without getting into a couple hundred years of unrest, just know that the Ptolemaic line was full of people arranging to kill family members in order to secure the throne.
Typical kind of Game of Thrones, sort of.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of, there's also going to be like a whole bunch of incest.
Oh boy.
But in the defense, which is probably not the right word, this was kind of an Egyptian tradition that was supposed to keep bloodlines pure, and the Greeks kind of adopted it, even though they hated it, to please the indigenous Egyptians. So like, I don't make the rules, I just work here. So we're going to talk about two murders before we even get to Cleopatra being born. They're important.
So I guess, back up. So like, Cleopatra, not Egyptian.
No. I'll talk about that a little bit more later. But yeah, Cleopatra is Greek.
Oh.
That's her family comes from Greece. Like I said, we'll get into it. There's a little bit of a debate that has been going on that I'm going to, as a white lady, address the best that I can.
Oh, lovely. Fun.
It actually ties into the Netflix documentary a little bit. But yeah, Cleopatra, not Egyptian. Although, like, her family had lived there for, like, 100 years in Alexandria. So, like, it's kind of, this is maybe not the best example, but it's kind of like British people born in India during that time period. Like,
right. Yeah.
All, like, they have their own way of living that's separate from, like, indigenous Indian people, but literally all they know is India.
Right. Yeah.
It's like that vibe, except, I mean, without the colonialism, but like it is colonialism. It's just we've been doing shit for a long time anyway. Murders.
Let's talk about the fun stuff. The murders.
Yeah. It happened thousands of years ago, so like it doesn't even count anymore. Before Cleopatra's reign, Rome was already involved in Egypt because they felt the need to get their stink all over everything, and they always have.
Oh, yeah.
When Ptolemy the Ninth died, his daughter, it looks like it's spelled Bernice, so we're gonna go with it. It's probably like Berenice. Berenice? Yeah. Anyway, Berenice the Third took over, but faced opposition as a woman ruling alone, despite not even being the first female pharaoh. I think this is kind of where the Greek and Roman stink gets over a little bit. Like, the Egyptians had female pharaohs before. It's not new.
Oh, yeah. But, like,
but people, yeah. But the people were like, don't love it. So she shared power by marrying her cousin slash stepson, Ptolemy the 11th.
Boy, I would love to see that family tree.
There's not a lot of forking, if you get my meaning. It's kind of just like a pull. So Ptolemy the 11th had his wife killed soon after their wedding and was lynched as a result, because it turns out people weren't cool with the lady pharaoh, but also weren't cool with her being murdered.
Well, you can't win them all, I guess.
Ptolemy the 11th had left his kingdom to Rome in his will as payment for some loans, giving Romans the legal right to take over Egypt after Ptolemy's assassination.
I didn't know you could do that.
That's not the first time it's going to come up either.
Oh, boy.
So he's like, well, I owe Rome a lot of money. Here, have my land. I'm dead. It doesn't matter to me.
I don't care. Yeah.
So the Romans divided the territories among Ptolemy the Ninth's illegitimate sons, giving Cyprus to Ptolemy of Cyprus and Egypt to Ptolemy the 12th.
Lots of dudes named Ptolemy in this episode.
Huh? There are infinite dudes named Ptolemy in this episode. I hope you're ready. There was one point where someone wasn't named Ptolemy, and I was like, oh, thank God. And then it ruined. Okay, so now we're in Cleopatra's era. So Cleopatra was thought to have been born in January of 69 BCE.
Nice.
Which makes her an Aquarius, which makes sense. And I'm not even into astrology. she was born in Alexandria to the ruling Ptolemaic pharaoh Ptolemy the 12th, who had inherited the lands from his Jesus. The guy's father who had his wife killed. Anyway, it stayed in the family. Aggressively stayed in the family.
Yeah. Oh, they were all about that.
We don't know exactly who Cleopatra's mother was, but it was possibly Ptolemy the 12th's wife slash half-sister, Cleopatra the 6th. There wasn't a lot of variation in names. So no. we don't know that much about her childhood, aside from a few things. First off, her mother disappeared from records after Cleopatra's birth. We don't know why.
Interesting.
Her tutor was a guy named Philostratos, Greek, from whom she learned oration and philosophy, and she also probably studied at the Library of Alexandria.
Oh, neat.
So she was very intelligent and well-educated.
Well-read, yeah.
She knew her way around languages. I'm not sure if it was part of her childhood schooling or like a side project, but she's notably the first Ptolemaic ruler to have bothered to learn Egyptian.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Way to put in the bare minimum of effort.
Her native language is actually a version of ancient Greek called Koine Greek. But by the time she was an adult, she could speak Egyptian, Ethiopian, Hebrew, maybe Aramaic, Arabic, Syrian, Median, Parthian, and Latin.
Damn, that's very impressive.
I know. So yeah, she also learned how to write and read Greek, Egyptian, and Latin, because as you well know, there's a difference between being able to speak something and being able to like read and write it.
Oh, yes.
This kind of indicated that she had some big plans to like bring Egypt's lands back together. She had several younger half-siblings, including two more Ptolemies and a sister named Arsinoe, the 4th. And she had an older sister named Berenice, the 4th, whom she probably shared a mother with. Maybe not. I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows?
Who the fuck knows? But Berenice and her mom are about to become important. So when the Romans annexed Cyprus, meaning they kind of took over control, due to suspected piracy in 58 BCE, Ptolemy the 12th's brother, Ptolemy of Cyprus, chose to die by suicide rather than be sent into exile. So Ptolemy the 12th became unpopular with the masses in Egypt for offering no public reaction to his brother's death. So it's kind of like when the queen didn't say a lot after Princess Diana died and people were like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Everybody lost their minds. Rightfully so. Yeah. Because like,
yeah,
behave like a human being. Like,
exactly. I think he may have been keeping quiet to try to suck up to Rome in case they decided to, like, annex Egypt as well, but that is pure speculation.
Yeah.
So, due to this massive dip in popularity and probably some other stuff, Ptolemy the 12th and a daughter, probably Cleopatra and not Arsinoe, because Arsinoe would have been, like, 3 at the time. Anyway, Ptolemy the 12th and Cleopatra were exiled from Egypt during a revolt, which would have been in 57, give or take. I'm very bad with BCE because it counts down.
Having to do the numbers backwards, yeah, it's hard. Yeah. I get it.
So this allowed Cleopatra's older sister Berenice to climb the throne in 58 BC, ruling jointly with her mother Cleopatra the 6th. Girl power of the highest degree.
Yes.
Regardless of what I'm about to say in a minute. So Ptolemy and Cleopatra. Yeah, I know. Ptolemy and Cleopatra fled to Rome, where they stayed at the villa of a Roman patron and a very humble dude named Pompey the Great. After Ptolemy arranged for the assassination of some Egyptian diplomats that were visiting Rome, his Roman supporters had to cover it up, and then the Roman Senate denied Ptolemy the offer of an armed escort and provisions for a return to Egypt. So he decided to bounce from Rome in late 57 and reside at the Temple of Artemis. So basically, Berenice sent like some people to Rome to like do diplomatic shit and told me, it was like, wouldn't it be fun if I just like had them killed? And then the Romans were like,
so rude.
The Romans were like, we don't want to start shit, but also not cool.
That's actually pretty shitty of you. And we're Rome.
Yeah. Everything this guy did sounded like he was just trying to suck up to Rome. Pompey managed to convince a guy named Aulus Gabinius, there we go.
Gabinius, that's correct.
Yes. He was the Roman governor of Syria. So Pompey convinced him to invade Egypt to help Ptolemy the 12th regain power. So maybe he does deserve to be called Pompey the Great. It's a pretty solid move.
Good friend.
Yeah. In the spring of 55 BCE, Ptolemy, Gabinius, and an army showed up to Egypt to get shit done, which they did maybe a little too enthusiastically.
Uh-oh.
One of Gabinius's officers, Mark Antony, had to stop Ptolemy from going on a killing spree against the people of Pelusium, which is the city between Egypt and Syria, for resisting. Mark Antony also saved the body of Berenice's husband after he was killed in a fight so that he could be returned and given a proper burial.
Oh, that's very nice and charming of him.
Yeah, it doesn't really have a bearing on the story, but it was a nice move. Mark Antony seems fine.
Joe, yeah.
Antony later claimed that this is when he fell in love with Cleopatra, but they didn't actually start seeing each other until 41 BCE, which was great because Cleopatra was 14 at the time.
Of course she was.
But, well, here's the thing. Like, 14 was marrying age at the time, and, like, I need to not put my 21st century morals on it. You know, life expectation fair, and all that.
But still, ugh.
It feels weird. So Ptolemy the 12th made Cleopatra his co-ruler in 52 BC and named her and his son Ptolemy the 13th, I know, as his so successors in his will. They ruled together, Cleopatra and her dad, I think successfully, for like a year. So Ptolemy the 12th died on March 22nd, 51 BCE, and Cleopatra became queen alongside her brother. She also neglected to tell Rome that her father had died for several months. Some think as late as August, probably I think she was trying to consolidate power and undermine her brother husband.
Oh, yeah. As you do.
Well, I think she thought she could handle it herself, which she probably could. So yeah, by August 29th, 51, official papers indicated that Cleopatra was the only ruler, as in she had kicked Ptolemy the 13th to the curb. And like I said, there was a chance they may have been married. There's no concrete proof. It was tradition. Her brother was also like 11. Her brother was 11 at the time.
So like, even if they were married, it was probably more like the...
have been just tradition and to consolidate power. She didn't need him. It's a fucking 11-year-old boy. Like,
what's he going to do?
Nothing. Play
Transformers at them? I don't know.
What's actually, he's going to fuck a lot of shit up. Just a warning. Okay, so we're going to take a pause and we're going to discuss the idea of Cleopatra that may be floating around in your people's heads. Like the Hollywood one, the Elizabeth Taylor version. You know, a hot lady commanding people to do her bidding on the grounds that she is hot. So Roman propaganda, after the fact, like after her life, painted Cleopatra as a siren who used her charm as a political tool. But many believe she was actually more well known for her intelligence than her looks. She spoke numerous languages, like we said. She had a deep education in mathematics, philosophy, public speaking, astronomy. In fact, Egyptian sources described her as a leader who valued scholars and enjoyed their company. She was very intelligent. So yeah, the fact that she like learned so many languages kind of pointed towards her wanting to expand her territory. And, you know, speaking the languages of the people around her would make her a more viable ruler. And she wanted to regain African and Asian territories that had belonged to the Ptolemaic Empire previously, but had been lost for whatever reason. So that leads us to, as we kind of hinted at before, was Cleopatra black? And I'm going to do my best as a non-professional researcher who does this for fun to summarize a very good Times article that I found on the subject, because they made Cleopatra black in the new Netflix documentary. People were mad, and some people were like, no, that's how it was supposed to be. The concept of race did not exist as we know it back in Cleopatra's time.
Right.
That didn't come up until around the 1700s, when white scientists started classifying everything to make shit orderly and biased as hell.
Yeah, this is when people talk about like race is a social construct. This is literally like
This is when they constructed it. It was the 1700s.
Yeah, they're like, we need to make ourselves feel better about ourselves.
Yeah, so everybody needs to be in a box. With possibly being of Greek, Egyptian, Macedonian, maybe even Roman descent, Cleopatra probably did have darker skin.
Yeah,
that's just how it is in that part of the world. Because I don't know if you guys know this, but the color of skin is impacted by how much sun people received, and they kind of evolved to have darker skin where there's more sun to prevent sunburn. That's why Norwegians probably shouldn't hang out around the equator. I have some beef with the Norwegians, I guess. I don't know.
Apparently, geez.
It was the first thing that came to mind because right before this, I was listening to the last podcast series about Anders Breivik, Norwegian. Cleopatra probably had darker skin, but that doesn't mean she was black in the way that we know it today, because that didn't exist. So yeah, we don't really know what color her skin was. Concept of race didn't exist at the time. It kind of pushes aside us needing to learn to understand like how people may have seen race and stuff back in Cleopatra's day by putting our own lens on it.
Right. Because like how we view race today is not necessarily relevant to how
it was viewed back then.
Yeah.
So long story short, Elizabeth Taylor probably shouldn't have played her, as that's not super accurate. Shit was different. She was tan. She's Greek. I don't know what to tell you guys. So on a related note, there's also been evidence to suggest that Cleopatra may not have been as hot as we were originally led to believe.
Also subjective.
Well, yeah, she could have been hot for the time. Some depictions show her with features that were more traditionally masculine, including like a strong nose. Greek. However, some argue this may have been a deliberate choice on her part to project strength. There are also theories that she portrayed herself as a man in her own propaganda to make herself fit in better with previous rulers.
Yeah, I could see that.
So according to the ancient writer Plutarch.
That guy.
Whatever. Yeah. Cleopatra's beauty was not necessarily jaw-dropping, but it was her apparently eloquent voice. She was very charming, and that's what set her apart. So when all is said and done, it's possible that Cleopatra was respected and considered charming because of her intelligence and, as I believe the kids say, her natural riz?
Natural riz. I was just going to say, like, you know, sometimes hotness is because of your personality.
Oh, yeah. Pete Davidson isn't hot, but look at him. He's probably charming as hell.
Apparently.
But yeah, Cleopatra might not have been hot. She might have just been really charming. Or maybe that was hot to some people. Again, we don't really know, do we?
Yeah. And again, like, what people viewed as attractive in Cleopatra's day is probably very different from, like, the beauty standards of today.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't, like, look at, like, a depiction of Cleopatra and judge her through modern eyes and then say, like, I don't know how people thought she was hot or not, because people viewed people differently.
Basically. And, like, in paintings and stuff, she was portrayed how that person, like, saw her, not necessarily photorealism, yeah. Because we weren't there yet.
Yeah.
And we haven't found her body, so we can't, like, reconstruct anything. Spoiler alert, I guess she dies at the end of this.
Oh, you mean she isn't still alive and living in New York City?
The oldest woman. All right, so back to our story. So Cleopatra had taken the throne. She had a whole mess of shit to deal with. So there was a famine because of a drought that was caused by the Nile failing to flood as much as it usually did. Not her fault. Plus, there were some ex-Roman soldiers, the Gabbianini, Niani, whatever, who were being a little, they were being lawless little shits on account of being bored from being out of work. These are the people that had come in with her dad and his friends to take it back. And then they just kind of stayed and, like, integrated themselves with the society. But they were like, I'm a Roman soldier. I could be a little shit. So they were causing problems.
That's so annoying.
And on top of all that, she had to deal with her dad's debt.
Oh, yeah. God damn.
So she owed the Roman Republic 17.5 million drachmas.
That sounds like a lot of monies.
Yeah, I didn't do the inflation or, you know, exchange rate on that one. So in 50 BCE, Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus, if I could say it, Harry Potter names out here. So he was a higher up dude in Syria. He sent two of his sons to Egypt, most likely to help negotiate with the Gabbianini and recruit them as soldiers to help defend Syria against the Parthians. There we go. The soldiers tortured and murdered the sons.
Well, nice.
For whatever reason, it may have been involvement by, like, a rogue advisor in Cleopatra's court. But Cleopatra was not cool with any of this. So she sent the murderers back to Bibulus as prisoners. To await his judgment, because, you know, they had killed his sons.
Ooh,
no, but Marcus sent them back to Cleopatra and chastised her for interfering with their punishment, as it was for the domain of the Rome, like, it was for the Roman Senate to decide.
Well, no, screw your Roman Senate. Who gives a shit?
I know. This, literally every decision, like, I talked about it a little bit earlier, but it seems like every decision the people make in this story is to kiss Rome's ass.
Yeah,
that's it. That's, like, they're probably so true. They see them as so powerful, and, like, they're afraid of them. So it's like, oh no, this is for Rome. This is Rome's. They'll take care of it. Also, the soldiers were Roman, so I guess that maybe had something to do with it. But
yeah, I guess. But still.
She literally sent this guy his son's murderers on a fucking platter, and he was like, "No thanks."
Yeah, that's, like, cool. But fine.
It's like, you shouldn't be messing with this stuff, ma'am. So, despite Cleopatra edging her brother out, Ptolemy the 13th still had some strong allies on his side. I assume because he had remained in Egypt when she was exiled with their father. So, like, people may have seen him as a stronger candidate.
Oh, yeah. Maybe just, like, he was around more. So,
also, he's a man.
There's always that. I mean, that's just how things are.
So one of his biggest supporters was his childhood tutor and property manager, the eunuch Pothinos. He was specifically called out as being a eunuch in the articles, and I'm just doing what they tell me to do. So this ballless asshole. So other people on Ptolemy the 13th side included Achilles, a well-known military leader, and Theodotus of Chios, another tutor of Ptolemy the 13th. Cleopatra even tried to team up with her other brother, Ptolemy the 14th, at one point to, like, get ahead of it. But by the fall of 50 BCE, Ptolemy the 13th had gained the upper hand and had started signing documents with his own name first, which was, like, a power move. And he eventually established his reign as sole regent in 49 BC, which started a war against his sister.
Well,
Ptolemies, man.
Too many Ptolemies.
Way too many Ptolemies. I think that was the problem. All right, so in the summer of 49 BC, Cleopatra and her forces were right in the middle of a battle against Ptolemy the 13th in Alexandria when Gnaeus Pompeius, the son of Pompey the Great, showed up asking for some military assistance for his dad, who was locked in a civil war with Julius Caesar. That one. So everyone was having a hard time. Can you imagine rolling up in the middle of a civil war being like, can I borrow some dudes, please?
You guys don't have anything else going on, do you?
So Caesar was making some tactical moves that forced Pompey and his team to make a run for it all the way to Greece. But in a surprising turn of events, both Cleopatra and Ptolemy the 13th put aside their differences and agreed to help Pompey by sending 60 ships and 500 troops, including those shithead Roman soldiers that I had previously mentioned.
Oh, yeah, those assholes.
Yeah, get them out of here.
That's a lot of boats.
It's a lot of boats. And it was a gesture that helped them chip away at the debt that they owed to Rome. And it was also maybe the last thing that they agreed on. So things took a turn for the worse for Cleopatra as she found herself losing the battle with her brother. She had to make a quick exit from Alexandria and head to Thebes. And by the spring of 48 BCE, she and her younger sister Arsinoe were headed to Roman Syria to get a team together to invade Egypt. So with an army in tow, Cleopatra tried to make her way back to Alexandria, but her path was blocked by her brother's forces. And she ended up setting up camp outside of Pelusium in the eastern Nile Delta. Like I said, Pelusium is between Syria and Egypt. It's like the border town. So she was trying to figure out what the fuck she was going to do. Her brother's army wouldn't let her back into Alexandria to like try to talk to him. And she didn't really have the manpower to force her way in. So meanwhile, in Greece, Caesar and Pompey's armies were in a big battle. And the battle led to the defeat of most of Pompey's troops and forced his retreat to Lebanon. Whatever. See what I mean about this just being like men doing shit and like Cleopatra's just like, oh my God. And we haven't even like gotten to the worst of it yet. So yeah, he had to flee to Lebanon, Pompey. So but it could be Pompey, but it sounds stupid. Like he's wearing a spinny hat.
Pompey. Is it spelled like Pompey the volcano?
P-O-M-P-E-Y. Pompey because it sounds more dignified.
Pompey does sound more dignified. It could be Pompey, but we're...
Not for this story.
That would sound pretty silly.
So Pompey, having a close relationship with the Ptolemies, decided that Egypt would be a safe haven for him to regroup. However, Ptolemy the 13th's advisors were concerned about Pompey using Egypt as a base during a Roman civil war because it was all about keeping in Rome's good graces, and Caesar was Rome. So let's just say that Ptolemy's was not well advised in his next move.
Oh boy.
In a stupid plan, Pompey followed a honey trap invitation to Pelusium and was killed by Ptolemy's men in September of 48. Ptolemy the 13th believed this act would show his strength and defuse any potential conflicts by gifting Pompey's embalmed head to Caesar.
Wow. Okay.
Caesar, who arrived in Alexandria in early October, did not appreciate the gift. I'm not sure why, because he was in a war with Pompey, but it could have been like a Tom and Jerry thing where like you want to catch him, but like you're not going to hurt him.
Yeah.
So probably already sick of the shit, Caesar urged both Ptolemy the 13th and Cleopatra to make peace and disband their armies. Cause what it reads as is this like, what, 14-year-old boy being like, look what I did. She isn't doing shit. I'm better. So unfortunately, Ptolemy the 13th's forces continued to keep Cleopatra from coming to Alexandria, where they were supposed to be having a discussion mediated by Caesar. So like so he's
literally like,
she's not showing up. Yeah. It's kind of like when there's like a divorce hearing and then one person just doesn't tell the other person that there's a court date and so they don't show up so they win by default. I'm pretty sure that's what Ptolemy was trying to pull. It's like, oh, she's not here. She must not want to. We should crush her. So well aware that Caesar's diplomatic intervention could help her get her throne back, Cleopatra came up with her own sneaky plan to get herself into the palace for an audience with Caesar. She allegedly persuaded her servant to wrap her up in a rug or a sack, if you don't want the fun Hollywood version, We don't know which one it was.
I choose anyway, the fun Hollywood version because it's much cooler.
Yeah, wrap her up in a rug, which was then presented to Caesar, who, it's worth noting, was 52 years old at this point. Cleopatra was like 18.
I mean, she knows her audience.
Oh, yeah. She's a hit with the early 50s crowd, as we'll learn. So rug was presented, out rolled Cleopatra, and let's just say Caesar was impressed. Sexy impressed. Maybe he was. He probably was, actually. Anyway, so Caesar tried to patch things up between the siblings, but Ptolemy and his advisors weren't having it and basically moved their war to from being against Cleopatra to being against Cleopatra and Caesar.
Oh, that's dumb.
Well, not necessarily. So for his part, like what he'd get out of this, Caesar needed to fund his own return to power in Rome because they were having a civil war situation, like stuff wasn't good. And in order to do this, he needed Egypt to repay the debt that Cleopatra's dad had racked up. So 4 months of war went by and Caesar was outgunned, outmanned, outnumbered, not outplanned. Because the Roman cavalry arrived. And I don't actually know if it was a cavalry, but it sounded cooler. But yeah, Roman backup swept in and saved the day. So Ptolemy was forced to flee Alexandria, and he was believed to have drowned in the Nile while fleeing. He was 15.
Oh, well, convenient, I guess. I love how this whole thing has been like two teenage siblings basically bickering.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, 15 was practically a man in that area.
Basically, yeah.
In that era. Coming back to Alexandria as an admittedly unpopular conqueror, Caesar gave the throne to the equally unpopular Cleopatra and her younger brother, Ptolemy the 14th, who was 13 years old at the time. I just let her rule by herself. Like, I don't understand.
Just let her rule by herself. Also, do you have any other boys' names to use? Any others?
No. So Caesar remained in Egypt with Cleopatra for a time, and around 47 BCE, she gave birth to a son, Ptolemy Caesar.
Interesting.
Known by the Egyptian people as Caesarion, or Little Caesar.
I like
the
pizza.
Following year, fuck you, the following year, the first hot and ready pizza was served. Also, that's not where the term Caesarian section came from. I looked it up. I don't know where it came from, but it's not that. I know people are curious. Sometime in 46 or 45 BCE, Cleopatra traveled with her brother and Caesarion to Rome to visit Caesar. I assume they had a nice time, opened up a few more pizza franchises, and that's how Italy became known for pizza. It's not. You heard the pizza episode. I just really like that they called him Little Caesar.
It is cute. Little Caesar. Little Caesar. Not like Caesar the Younger, just like Little Caesar.
Well, okay. Technically his name was Ptolemy Caesar. There's like four names in this episode, I'm sorry.
Caesar, Ptolemy, Mark Anthony. He's got two of them. He took two of them.
So if you guys are at all aware of Julius Caesar's story,
yeah.
I'm sure you know what's about to happen.
He goes on vacation.
Yes. On March 15th, which is coming up, 44 BCE, Caesar was stabbed to death. And I'm not going to get into why or how. There's shit you can read about it.
Politics.
The whole play. Yeah, basically. This is back in the day where, like, if you didn't like what someone was doing, you kind of just killed him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm not saying it would make the Senate a little bit better now, but... So anyway, Cleopatra was actually in town at the time of the murder, and she stuck around to make a bold move. So while she was there, she attempted to have Caesarion named as heir to the throne.
Well, okay.
Well, Caesar's will named his grandnephew Octavian as heir, and Octavian arrived in Italy around the same time Cleopatra decided to go back to Egypt. Unrelated, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Also, I misspelled depart in my notes. So it does say that Cleopatra defarted for Egypt. We're just going to sit with that one for a second.
Defarted.
Yeah, that's when you let out a big toot and then exit the room. Soon after her return to Egypt, Ptolemy the 14th was poisoned. And I'm sure you can guess who probably had that arranged.
Not Cleopatra.
No, certainly not.
Definitely not.
So 3-year-old Caesarion was named co-regent with his mother and given a new name, Ptolemy the 15th.
God damn it. We are up to 15 Ptolemies. That's too many Ptolemies. That's what this episode should be called. Too many Ptolemies.
I'm not going to make it about them. This is Cleopatra's episode. She's just surrounded by idiot men. All named Ptolemy.
I also picture every Ptolemy in this story to look exactly the same.
Yeah. For some reason, in my head, they all look like Jesse Eisenberg. Right after we talked about how Egyptians weren't, or Greeks and stuff, weren't white. I don't know. They'd probably cast them if they were doing a movie. All right. So by this point, Cleopatra had strongly aligned herself with the goddess Isis. Not that one. Not the Isis. Isis has really taken a hit with the PR in the last, like, 10 years. Isis is the daughter of the earth god Geb and the sky goddess. It's spelled Nut. It doesn't seem like it should be pronounced Nut.
Newt?
Newt, maybe. And she was the sister of the deities Osiris, Seth, and, my note scrolled, Nephthysis. She was also Osiris's wife. Anyway, so she's pretty powerful. Aligning yourself with a deity wasn't unprecedented. Cleopatra the 12th, oh no, sorry, the 7th Roman numerals, am I right?
One of the many other Cleopatras.
Yeah, Cleopatra the 7th actually referred to herself as the new Isis. So this was consistent with the ancient Egyptian tradition of associating royalty with divinity in order to, like, reinforce the position of kings and queens.
Oh yeah. How do you think monarchies lasted so long? Old hat.
Cleopatra III had also claimed to be associated with Isis. So, like, you know. So at this point, with her 3-year-old son as co-regent and all other obstacles out of her way, I believe she had her sister Arsinoe banished to, like, get her out of the way.
Oh, that's too bad. Weren't they, like, buddies for a while?
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything when it comes to being pharaoh.
Yeah, I guess, like, you're buddies until it's no longer convenient.
Until they're a threat.
Yeah.
So yeah, Cleopatra's hold on power in Egypt was more secure than it had ever been. But still, the unreliable flooding of the Nile resulted in failing crops, eventually leading to inflation and hunger. So things aren't going, like, great. I think people like her, but it's kind of like Joe Biden. We're like, we like him. We know he's kind of doing his best, but, like, is he doing his best?
No.
I'm not saying that, like, because the flooding is kind of out of Cleopatra's hands. I'm not saying that about other stuff that's happening in America now. It's not a one-to-one ratio.
Yeah, correct.
All right. So, again, meanwhile in Rome, conflict was ramping up between a group of Caesar's allies, including Mark Antony, Octavian, and Lepidus, and Caesar's assassins, Brutus and Cassius. You know, the Et tu, Brute guy? Yeah. That one. Both sides sought Egyptian support, and after careful consideration, Cleopatra sent 4 Roman legions stationed in Egypt by Caesar to aid Mark Antony, Octavian, and Lepidus, known as the Triumvirate. I think the second Triumvirate.
It does sound very grand.
In 42 BCE, after brutally spanking Brutus and Cassius, Mark Antony and Octavian shared power in Rome. I don't know what happened to Lepidus. He may have died in the process.
He's irrelevant, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, the only ones that are really going to come up again are Octavian and Mark Antony. So they're ruling Rome. And so shortly after assuming his new role, Mark Antony, not Anthony. There's a difference.
Anthony.
Mark Antony. I do just a picture a little ant wearing, like, a Roman centurion headdress and stuff. Anyway, so Mark summoned Cleopatra to the city of Tarsus, which is in modern day Turkey, to try and strengthen the alliance between Rome and Egypt. Cleopatra agreed, loaded up her best boat, put on her nicest Isis cosplay, and sailed over to impress the new leader.
As you do.
Oh, yeah. Antony, who associated himself with the Greek deity Dionysus, was very into Cleopatra's whole deal.
How could you not?
Honestly, I love this for them. Mark Antony agreed to protect Egypt and Cleopatra's rule, pledging support for the dispatch of her younger sister, Arsinoe. Yeah. So Cleopatra returned to Egypt, probably satisfied with a diplomatic job well done. And Mark Antony followed shortly after, leaving his third wife, Fulvia, and their children behind in Rome.
Good dude. Good job.
I'm not saying he, like, they're both objectively shitty people by 21st century standards, but I don't know. I kind of love them.
It's romantic in a way.
Yeah. Well, Mark Antony spent the winter of 41 to 40 BCE in Alexandria, during which he and Cleopatra formed a drinking society called the Inimitable Livers. I'm sure it sounds better in Greek.
That does sound pretty great.
The club engaged in nightly feasts and wine binges, and its members occasionally took part in games and contests. One of Antony and Cleopatra's favorite activities supposedly involved wandering the streets of Alexandria in disguise and playing pranks on its residents.
That sounds so cute. They just, I know. Because they're probably, she's in her, 20s, and he's... But, they're just, dumb kids having fun. That's cute.
If I had to guess, and I haven't actually read or watched the Shakespeare in play, I probably should. If I had to guess, I'd say that Cleopatra was excited to have someone who was also intelligent and got her.
Yeah.
And she made Mark Antony feel young again in a way that Fulvia and their three kids couldn't.
Yeah. Dick move to Fulvia, but
yeah. So in 40 BCE, after Antony's return to Rome after his little snowbird adventure, Cleopatra gave birth to twins, Alexander Helios and Cleopatra Selene.
There's good names.
Good names, and not another Ptolemy.
Yeah, thank God. I have too many.
So after Fulvia fell ill and passed away, Antony was in a tough spot. He was expected to show his loyalty to Octavius and ended up striking a diplomatic marriage with Octavian's half-sister, Octavia. Cleopatra was not impressed, and the two broke up.
Certainly she's got to understand the practicalities of that, though.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I think, and also Mark Antony had to, give up some land that he would have given to Cleopatra. He had to give it back to Octavian, because Octavian was I'm Caesar's heir, and, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of going on a power trip about it. So, meanwhile, Cleopatra was doing wonders for Egypt, making it even more prosperous under her reign. She finally got a hold of it. Her foreign policy goal, in addition to preserving her personal power, was to maintain Egypt's independence from the rapidly expanding Roman Empire by trading with Eastern nations like Arabia and maybe even as far away as India. She built up Egypt's economy and bolstered her country's status as a world power. She was crushing it.
It's almost like, bitches, get shit done.
Yeah, when she doesn't have to deal with a 13-year-old boy who's like, I want to rule too. Instead, she's got a 4-year-old who, doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
So at some point in 40 BCE, King Herod, that one. From the Bible, who was a real dude, I will say in his defense, it's pretty unclear if he actually did the stuff that he was accused of in the Bible.
I'm sorry, Emily. Are you telling me that something that was written in the Bible might not be 100% factually true?
No, King Herod probably didn't pull an Anakin Skywalker. Anyway, so he turned up as a refugee, having experienced some conflict back home in Judea, where Mark Antony had made him a ruler, but not king. Is complicated. Cleopatra attempted to provide him with a military assignment, but Herod declined and traveled to Rome, where Octavian and Antony named him king of Judea. Cleopatra wasn't super excited about it because she had planned to take back some of the lands in Herod's kingdom that had once belonged to her. But, her ex-boyfriend just made this guy, king of it all, and it's going to be a whole thing.
Yeah.
Sensing a very powerful ally that he also thought was real pretty, Antony asked for Cleopatra's help once again in 37 BCE. He needed help funding his military campaign against Parthian, and in return, he agreed to give back a big chunk of Egypt's eastern territories. During these negotiations, Antony and Cleopatra reignited their affair, which resulted in the birth of their son, Ptolemy Philadelphos.
No!
In 36 BCE.
Ever again.
Yeah, we almost made it out of here without more Ptolemies. So after a humiliating defeat in Parthia, Antony publicly rejected his wife Octavia's efforts to rejoin him and instead returned to Egypt and Cleopatra.
Damn.
Homeboy made his choice, I guess.
I guess. I
don't know why, but Mark Antony is played by Brad Pitt in my head.
Interesting choice.
Yeah. I don't
I make the decisions. I picture him more as an Ian Grufford.
Griffith? It's Griffith.
Is it? Okay.
It's spelled Griffud, but he's Welsh, so it's Griffith.
That makes a lot of sense. At least he knew who I was talking about.
Oh, yes, because I also pronounced it Grafud for a long time. I could see it. Maybe like a Gerard Butler.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know why Brad Pitt. Maybe I just want to watch Troy.
It's probably it.
Ooh, Luke Evans.
Ooh, I could see that.
I could see Luke Evans. As a sidebar, we were watching the Hobbitses, all three of those films. And you really don't think about how much Luke Evans looks like Orlando Bloom until they're in the same film.
They do very much have similar eyebrow structures.
It kind of felt like, oh, here's Legolas, an Orlando Bloom character that you love. But as a bonus, here's Will Turner.
Here's an extra one.
So after Mark Anthony blew off his wife to go hang out with his girlfriend, they had a public celebration in 34 BCE known as the Donations of Alexandria, where Anthony declared Caesarion as Caesar's son and rightful heir.
Oh, a bold
move. As opposed to Octavian? His friend Octavian, who was the legal heir.
That's going to end well for everybody, I'm sure.
And Mark Antony awarded land to each of his children with Cleopatra, but not his children with Octavia.
Well.
So it's all very romantic, but it was a very, very politically stupid move.
Yeah. Yeah.
Octavian was a powerful man, and Mark Antony had just rejected his sister, disparaged his legal claim to Rome, and given away Roman lands to his bastard children with the woman Antony had cheated on his sister with. So, I get it. This began a war of propaganda between Antony and Octavian, who claimed that Antony was entirely under Cleopatra's control and would abandon Rome and found a new capital in Egypt. It seems like a jump, but sure. In 32 BCE, the Roman Senate stripped Mark Antony of all of his titles, and Octavian declared war on Egypt.
Damn. Yeah, that's about what I expected.
Yeah, it makes sense. So instead of getting into the whole flame war between the two, here's some of the highlights. Octavian accused Mark Antony of illegally detaining the king of Armenia. No other information.
So specific and yet not enough details.
Cleopatra was said to have brainwashed Mark Antony with witchcraft and sorcery and was as dangerous as Homer's Helen of Troy in the destruction of Roman civilization.
You know what? If that was being said about me, I would be okay with it.
Guy who's notoriously wrong, Pliny the Elder, claimed that Cleopatra once dissolved a pearl worth tens of millions of dollars in vinegar just to win a dinner party bet.
Also cool. Sorry, you're not making her sound less cool with your propaganda.
This is my favorite one. Mark Antony was accused of stealing books from the Library of Pergamum to restock the Library of Alexandria. Because of that whole burning down thing.
Oh, funny.
So the conflict reached a very real and not just a gossipy climax the following year in a famous battle, naval battle at Actium. Cleopatra personally led several dozen Egyptian warships into the fray alongside Mark Antony's fleet. She sailed into battle.
She's awesome.
Right? They were no match for Octavian's navy.
Oh.
They had boats. Octavian had a navy.
Fair. Yeah.
Roman writers would later accuse Cleopatra of deserting Antony, but their intent may have been to break the blockade and salvage as much of their fleet as possible. So Cleopatra bounced and then Antony followed behind and boarded her ship, which was apparently notably identifiable by its purple sails.
Ooh, very stylish.
I know. So the two escaped the battle and headed for Greece. Antony reportedly avoided Cleopatra during this 3-day voyage until her ladies-in-waiting urged him to speak with her.
Well, was he embarrassed because he lost a battle?
I think he was embarrassed that they lost the battle.
That's sweet.
Here's the thing. The battle went on without Cleopatra and Antony until the next morning, and then it was followed by massive defections of officers, troops, and allied kings. Who went from Antony's side to Octavian's side.
Yikes. Not great. Not ending well.
Yeah, the story doesn't end on a happy note. I feel like you guys should probably know that. So after a series of negotiations that didn't quite pan out, Octavian decided it was time to make a move and head towards Egypt in the spring of 30 BCE. He stopped in Judea on the way there, where his good friend Herod supplied his army with provisions. Octavian wasted no time and captured Pelusium, and defeated Antony's forces. So
wow.
he's he's almost at Egypt. As Octavian made his way to Alexandria, Antony made a comeback and managed to secure a small victory in Alexandria. However, the tables turned on August 1st, 30 BCE, when Antony's naval fleet surrendered to Octavian, and then his cavalry also surrendered. About to get real sad, guys.
Oh, boy.
Sensing the end was near, Cleopatra hid in her tomb, which, if remember, like, tombs were a big deal, so had them built when they were still alive. Anyway, so she hid in her tomb with her attendants and sent word to Antony that she had taken her own life. Devastated, Mark Antony stabbed himself in the stomach.
Oh, geez.
While he was possibly still alive, he was brought to Cleopatra at her tomb, where he died of his wound.
Aww.
I believe there was a note about how she, like, told him that he had done a good job and that he died, and it was very sad, but that might just be some Shakespeare shit.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Despite Cleopatra's intentions to join Antony in death, one of Octavian's people caught her and prevented her from carrying out her plans to burn herself and everything in her tomb.
Rude.
Cleopatra was granted the opportunity to embalm and lay Mark Antony to rest within her tomb before being escorted to the palace. On August 12th, 30 BCE, after a meeting with Octavian, Cleopatra locked herself in her room with two of her female servants, allegedly her manicurist and hairdresser. The means of her death is uncertain, but some have theorized that she used a poisonous snake known as an asp, which is a symbol of royalty, to complete her suicide at age 39. She was poisoned to death. We're just not sure if she, like, had a snake brought in, if she, like, swallowed poison, but the snake story sticks around pretty hard.
I mean, that's pretty fucking dramatic.
Oh yeah, it sounds like something she'd do, honestly.
Do we know, like, did she have to sneak this in, essentially, because they were trying to keep her from
okay, basically Octavian was going to use her as, like, a showpiece,
right?
According to her wishes, Cleopatra's body was buried with Mark Antony's in a tomb that is lost to this day.
I want to find it.
I know, right?
I want to find it somewhere. Like,
it's like Alexander the Great's tomb. It's like, why can't we just...
just, like, draw us a
picture? I want to know. Her death left Octavian, later known as Emperor Augustus I, to celebrate his conquest of Egypt and his consolidation of power in Rome by murdering Caesarion and parading Cleopatra and Mark Antony's surviving children through the streets.
Ouch. That's rough.
Yeah, Octavian's a dick. And so ended the Ptolemaic dynasty and Egypt as it had been for thousands of years.
Well, at least we'll never have to hear about another Ptolemy ever again.
So we'll close out Cleopatra's story with some quotations from two real big fans. The poet Horace wrote, writing in the late 1st century BCE, called her, quote, a crazy queen plotting to demolish the capital and topple the Roman Empire.
Again, making her sound very cool.
A century later, the Roman poet Lucan labeled her as, quote, the shame of Egypt, a lascivious fury who is to become the bane of Rome.
Also really cool.
So yeah, Cleopatra, great for Egypt, bad for Rome.
slap that on campaign button. Good for Egypt, bad for Rome.
Yeah, most of what we know, because history is written by the victors. Most of what, like, history had said about Cleopatra that we knew about extensively was Roman propaganda, and they hated her because they're like, oh, she ruined everything, when it was really just, like, a bunch of men.
Yeah. It's so easy to, like, I see, like, it's so easy to dismiss someone like her as, like, who is, like, very intelligent and very well educated as, like, oh, well, she was just like a woman. This harlot that was, like, really sexy, and that's how she had all the men on her side, and that was it. Like, that was her power. Yeah, it was, like, very easy to dismiss her in that way, and thus lead to the popular perception we have of her today.
Basically. And I do think that Cleopatra and Mark Antony loved each other.
Yeah.
Clearly, he stabbed himself.
I would say he did a lot of stupid shit for her, so
he did a lot of stupid shit for her. Well, and here's the thing, like, he was forced into marrying Octavian's sister. Like, he clearly didn't want it, but what was the other option?
Yeah, I mean, like, what did he expect? Like, he is a political guy. He's got to make a political marriage.
But I think, he chose to be happy for a little while instead of miserable and secure in power. So, yeah. You know, props for that. Octavian is an asshole.
Truly.
I need to verify this, because I might be wrong. Octavian may be the one that the month of October is named after. I read a very stupid story the other day. Okay, maybe not. So like there was a tradition of, you know, Roman emperors naming months after themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever got October originally had 30 days, but the guy that named it after himself was like, I want 31 days like the other guys. And that's why October has 31 days.
God, men are stupid.
It also bugs me that October is the 10th month of the year, not the 8th.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's neither here nor there. Yeah, so that's Cleopatra in a nutshell. I definitely didn't get into everything, but we also don't know for certain everything she did. So
she sounds like a very cool and interesting lady.
I wish she hadn't, you know, murdered so many siblings, but
I mean, that's just kind of what she had to do.
I guess. If my brother started a war against me, I would retaliate, I guess.
Probably.
Like, I wouldn't just be like, all right, whatever. So, I get it. Yeah, I mean, she was a very, like, shrewd political leader. And I do think that, as you mentioned before, just got reduced down to she was hot. Mm-hmm. And people did stuff because she was hot. And that's not the case.
Yep. She's very capable.
Caesar seemed to really like her.
Yeah. So take that.
I'm actually unclear as to whether Julius Caesar was an asshole who was murdered rightfully or.
I simply do not know enough about Rome to make a decision on that one.
I simultaneously know not enough about Roman history and too much. Anyway, so yeah. I don't know if you have any fun Cleopatra stories. You could send them to us on Instagram at Afternoonified.
If you know where Cleopatra's tomb is.
Yes. I'll even take Alexander the Great's tomb at this point. I know Moon Knight was supposed to have found it at some point, but, you know, that was a deep cut. Yeah, Instagram at Afternoonified. Get Afternoonified.com. You can email us at AfternoonifiedPod@gmail.com. Remember to rate, subscribe, review. If you want great for Egypt, bad for Rome campaign buttons, let me know. And yeah, we'll see you next week for a mini that no dead children.
No dead children.
None.
I promise you.
All right, guys. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
More podcasts like the one you just listened to, go to SoBelowMedia.com.
This is as above, so below.